You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one podcast in all things communication, advertising, and marketing. I'm your host, Ted Lau, award-winning agency owner, podcaster, and family guy. Today on our show, we have Justin R. Melville, Vice President Brand Experience at REW. Before joining REW, Justin has built companies, products, and teams across the music, payments, digital health, and real estate space. His music startup was very similar to Patreon, and he gave a TED Talk relating to the music industry back in 2012. He also founded a company called Akaya, which he appeared on Dragon's Den for. His role at Akaya involved conceiving, designing, and iterating products that made the entire rental experience simpler, smarter, and faster for all stakeholders. Justin, welcome.
Thanks, Ted. It was quite a
month. How you doing?
I'm great. So cool to be on a podcast. First time in a long time. And my first remote one, actually. So
that's right. You're actually hailing from where?
Cape Town, South Africa. Fun fact, there's a city in South Africa called Durban. It's on the East Coast. It is, if I'm not mistaken, geographically the furthest point on Earth from Vancouver. You could not be further away from Vancouver if you were in.
So you are probably, I think, the most distant host that we have interviewed. We've interviewed an astronaut, Chris Hadfield, before, but he was actually on Earth, not in space. So technically, you hold the title for longest distance podcast guest for Marketing News Canada. So congratulations.
Take that, Mrs. Liza Gang. Thanks,
man. You go. So yeah, maybe let's chat a little bit about who you are. Tell us a little bit about Justin and, you know, your world and how you got here and brand experience and all that kind of stuff.
Blind chance, bit of idiot's luck. But no, seriously, I guess no question stymies me quite like tell us where you're from for some reason. To cut a long story short, I'm kind of a designer entrepreneur who's always kind of had a little soft spot for where sort of branding and I guess, you know, before even there was such a thing as apps would have been just online experiences where that whole space has been my bread and butter since I was a small boy of around about 12. And I've kind of one way or another built on that over time. I've, as you sort of said in the intro, I've taken a crack at a few industries like music, where our company Airborne was one of the first, I think, pioneers in that crowdfunding, direct contribution and support space. So like long before Patreon. And we really saw, like, we thought that that was where the world was going. And I guess we were right, but probably about 10 years too early. And I think that's definitely another trend for me. Because, I've had the opportunity to just work wherever there's something exciting going down and wherever there are, you know, some pretty young, ambitious people. I try my best to put myself in the best possible circumstances to both have a good time, but also try and do something of you know, substance. And so journey through real estate into dipping into digital health, where I was completely blown away by stuff I didn't know. And more recently came out of the payment space in South Africa, helping small businesses. And what I've really learned along the way is a lot of ways not to do stuff.
Oh, is that right? That's the best way of learning, actually.
Yeah, I can definitely lecture for hours on ways not to do things. Funny enough, actually, I'm published in a textbook. Well, I'm not published, but my story is University of Southern California, I believe. I'm in their syllabus under the title Graceful Failure in a textbook. So if you Google my name and the word failure, you get results.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, so I want to hear that. Now, that was not part of your bio. Your PR guy did not send that. But I'm sorry, Justin, we're going to have to dig into that. So how does one get into a USC textbook around failure? Graceful failure, right? Graceful failure.
Well, first you have to fail. That's, you know, that's the important part. But then, so in our case, it really came upon we fought a good fight with Airborne. We tried to build a community around it. Bear in mind, this is like 2011, so a lot hadn't been invented yet. And the world looked quite different from then. And we fought and we fought and we fought. And eventually the day came where you have to send out that email that says, it's over. You know, you have to pronounce your own dream dead, pretty much. And yeah, so I did. I went through the process. I did that the best way I could. And like, we just got this really unexpected surge of like support and I guess love in a way that came in. And it just so happened that, you know, one of the lessons that we learned from all of it was, well, there were several, but, you know, like one of the things was to reach out for help sooner. And it was just, you know, as I was sort of sharing those learnings around, you know, the end of Airborne, the post-mortem, it turns out someone, I never actually met the author, but had observed it, followed my work, watched the TED Talk and everything, and combined it as, and served it as an example of graceful failure. I have no idea why we were chosen, but it's a fun fact.
Well, I think that's great. I mean, as an entrepreneur, someone that runs an agency, I've had this agency for 20 years now. Man. And I mean, isn't it the saying, what doesn't kill you make you stronger, right?
So I've gotten pretty chunky.
Or fatter. Is that what you just said? Oh, well, that's okay. You know, plump failure is also acceptable, I believe.
Yes.
So what did you learn from that experience? Maybe let's go to there.
Hey, man. Look, timing is a big part of success, I think. Not always in your control. There's certainly things you can do. I think that for us, if I can, it's a bit of a techie thing, but I would say that, like, you know, we were trying to invent this whole new paradigm for industrial change. Industrial revolution for music is kind of nothing less would do. And that sounds nice, but I do think that being very, very specific and focused about, it doesn't have to be the best sounding problem in the world that you're trying to solve, but rather just focusing on, like, for us, it would have been less focusing on how to be immune from Digital Millennium Copyright Act and unable to be taken down by Visa. We had this whole thing, like, art should be free, so we were, like, based out of Iceland and Panama, and we couldn't be taken down even if we tried. The problem was we never got enough users to really test the infrastructure. Because we had overbuilt in terms of creating this new world and industry, the infrastructure for it, instead of, you know, I think what we missed was more that the story was important, the actual connection, the one-on-one. We should have dedicated every cent we had towards nurturing those connections rather than building infrastructure. And I think, you know, sometimes as an entrepreneur and certainly as a designer, you know, you've got the solution and you're going to roll it out. Sometimes, yeah, it's definitely, in my case, it's paid more dividends to just move a bit more slowly and be a little bit more open to the moment, I guess, rather than planning the whole thing years in advance.
Do you think that actually has to do with the lean startup? I know there's a book out there that talks about it. And it sounds like you were more Kevin Costner in Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. And in your case, you built it, but maybe you didn't have product market fit. Do you think that might have been it?
I think so. Look, you know, there's always 100 reasons or 100 things you could have done better. I do think that one of the lessons we learned out of music and specifically was that the music industry did not, and I still believe does not, want to be saved. For what we learned is that for the big game, certainly in 2011, for a big game being talked about being an independent artist, the hundreds and thousands of artists that we met along the journey truly only wanted two things. And the first one was to wake up next to someone more attractive than them. And the second thing was a big label record contract. They didn't care about being screwed. They didn't care about the economics. They didn't care about the exploitation. They wanted their name and lights and all the cachet. That was their dream, right?
Fame.
Yeah, exactly. And so we found that our messaging to artists was definitely like, it was, it was perhaps mistargeted. In fact, what we probably would have done better to do is find the best friend from the artist, who is the de facto manager. And then the economic model of distribution and the future and that kind of stuff would have made sense to that kind of an audience. But for artists, they just like, put it this way, the vast majority of artists are artists and pure creative. You know, finding the one with smart business sense is a rarity. And so I think that we would have done better to just be a little bit more, yeah, I think chosen our audience a bit better might have been one of the things that was really helpful for that project. But I can't overestimate enough. I think we were still very early, and I'm not sure that anything we changed could have really saved us in the end. We were also trying to do it from Cape Town, South Africa, which was, in hindsight, a bold choice.
Well, it's all right, man. I think we all learn, and maybe not finding the junior David Geffen is where you had a hiccup, but that's okay. You learn from it. Now, wanted to understand how someone goes from music to digital health to payments from the other side of the planet, now coming all the way to the West Coast, Canada, to do real estate.
Yeah. So the reason for coming to the West Coast and to Canada was largely just following another great South African who made the journey before me. And that's actually the boss man at REW, Simon Bray, who is also a South African. And during the last 10 years of my career, we were in the same orbit as part of, you know, the rental and real estate space here in South Africa. He was, you know, he was head of one of the biggest, essentially the REW of South Africa. And I was in the high-tech space, you know, disruptor, tanks on the horizon kind of character. And we never really found this opportunity to work together during that time for a number of reasons. You know, his world and my world just didn't quite manage to get in sync. And so when the opportunity to, you know, once he took over from REW here and my life had simplified, I decided that I'd had enough of being an entrepreneur for a couple of decades. And, you know, for me, it was that I really was looking for something to join for once instead of something to lead. I didn't need that extra weight on my shoulders for a season, and so the opportunity, you know, stars aligned, it became great. But what is really cool is that it is a new challenge, but it's not a new thing. I've always, since Airborne, the music company, the rentals, digital health, it's always been very much around connecting individuals, like the power, empowering the individual, essentially. So I'm not one for the crowd and the masses, but in music, we were trying to create individual connections between, you know, artist and fan directly. With digital health, we were trying to say, how can me as an individual understand my own physiology better so that I don't have to outsource the knowledge of my body to a medical professional or a medical company of any sort. With payments, we were dealing with like the most entry-level entrepreneurs here in South Africa, like literally people selling sweets at a traffic light, like, but taking credit card now, you know, really empowering small business, getting there. And for REW, that's exactly what the whole new vision is for the business. When I say new vision, I think it's something that we've been living with for a while, but it's the transition away from this, oh, REW has got the most page views and eyeballs and high engagement rates and all of that. We're starting to be way more concerned with the individual stories of people, particularly, you know, people of my generation, the millennial-esque generation. You know, there's interesting times ahead as that old story unfolds. I mean, you know, you work plenty with real estate clients, Ted. But with new homes and how we're going to figure, you know, like how do we, there's a real estate, I don't want to use the word crisis willy-nilly, but there is this really big challenge. And, you know, I'm going to be joining that as I come to Canada. I'm going to be a millennial trying to get onto the ladder somewhere. I don't own a house yet. And so what we're doing with Real Estate Works, or REW, is to become a brand that helps the individual with what we call a real estate adventure. So there's a great sort of a reward on the other side, and we know it's more or less over there. The journey between here and there is a little bit treacherous, and we don't know the road exactly. And so we see ourselves as saying, cool, home seeker, we go together, and we'll get you from this moment to your first night. And I think in that way, it's this common thread of just trying to solve the individual problem, but at market scale. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. What's really interesting is you basically started this conversation where you said timing wasn't quite right. I'm 10 years too ahead of the times. And you've joined an organization. And for those of you who are listening that aren't aware of REW Real Estate Works, it used to be called Real Estate Weekly in Vancouver. It's a publication where, you know, this is back in the day when, you know, homes are on sale and it's a printed publication. And if you're home shopping, you'd pick up this rag. It was free and you'd walk around all over the place and go shop for condos. And, you know, Ballistic Arts, we, you know, been around long enough where we did a lot of advertising for our real estate developer clients where we'd put ads when a condo project was launched onto this publication. And as someone that's a third party that has used them to do advertising, it was always, you were always wondering like, well, there's this digital thing that's happening, this the digital revolution, evolution, whatever you want to call it. And it didn't seem like this publication had the foresight to move ahead with the technology, with the times. And now, quite frankly, it seems like it's a little bit on a back foot. So for you to be somebody that was well ahead of the game, you were an early, early adopter. I think there's a on the curve there, someone that's before early adopter, but you were that. And to somebody now who's coming to an organization where you're trying to transform them digitally to some kind of a platform that's going to be well, maybe not well past what they're at now, but to get them up to the times, as it were, and into an experience that's going to resonate with us elder millennials and also the younger Gen Zs. So that's quite interesting of an experience. And how are you able to, or what do you see when you get here? What do you see you're gonna be needing to do?
Yeah, so I mean, as you pointed out, it started as a print publication, and I think at its time, quite a successful one. And then it did sort of make that journey that every other, you know, the journey that 1,000 newspapers made before it to become an online portal. But when you say that it's sort of fallen behind in the digital context, you know, as a pure outsider starting to explore, you know, where one might want to live, prices of rentals, neighborhoods and stuff, I wonder, you know, where you're looking at in terms of what you see as the leadership in Canada, because from my perspective, you know, the real dominant players are stuff like realtor.ca. And I would certainly say that I don't see a very evolved, I don't see 2022 written all over that experience. And I think, you know, across Canada, they are very much the incumbent, and for good reason as well. I think, you know, they've been a large part of the scene. I mean, they basically are the scene for the most part. So what is really exciting about REW is that it's managed to maintain this little island of dominance in BC, right? So we're like in BC, it is, I mean, it's twice the size audience-wise of anything else. And so we've got this kind of, we've got the makings of a loyal, like, and it's like a loyal base to work from, but it's 30 years old. It's multi-generational. It's from 1978, you know? And so what we've got here is something that has been around for so long that has changed before and now can change again. So if anything, instead of starting with, you know, like the shiniest landing pages and the buzziest of buzzwords, we're going somewhere very different. We're not trying to run towards the future. We're actually just trying to catch up to today in a large sense. And in many senses, catch up to 10 minutes ago, because largely as we, you know, technology moves at a like laser pace, and I think younger generations and tech and even marketing, you know, you try and stay on that, you try and stay like on the shockwave in front of the cutting edge. But with real estate, I mean, is there any, is there anything more concrete, pardon the pun, or more unwilling to be dragged forward than the real estate industry? And why would we don't think, we're like, REW's mission isn't to change the way the real estate industry works or to disrupt anything. It isn't about, you know, moving towards direct models that cut out the agents. No. I think the way I explain what we're doing at REW is that other brands, other companies in the space are going, we're going to make real estate simpler, better, faster, cheaper. We're going to help you move, sell this house and put it down over there and secure it and do NFTs and a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, like, but we're going to make it better, simpler, faster. REW is like, yo, this is hard. This is a hard thing that you're trying to do here. It is something that you will do again. It's probably one of the biggest things that you're going to go through. And we recognize that it's tough, and we recognize that you're a bit out of your depth. And what we want to do as REW is meet you as a brand, not as a platform or an app, but actually say, like, we are you. We're learning together. Like, we want to create the content that helps you move forward with confidence, rather than saying we're going to use some algorithm to connect you via a, you know, a nebula galaxy to the home of your dreams. It's no, man. It's like, you'll be lucky if you get a house, but you know what? If it takes you 10 years, we'll be with you that whole time. Like, you, that whole space of searching for a home from your first search all the way to your first night, we see that as our opportunity to meet the market. And as I say, our approach, if I can say what is going to be different to everyone else that you see in of the other players in Canada, even if you take some of the US entrants like Zillow and that sort of stuff, is that we're not going platform. We're not going technology. We're going brand. We're going story. We're going living the eating our own dog food, as they say. I'm literally doing my, I'm learning everything from strata to where the new home developments are coming up, like the whole guarantees on new homes. How cool is that? You know, I'm learning all of this, but the content doesn't exist, right? As a millennial, elder millennial, if I don't know how to do something, I'm on YouTube looking for a tutorial. Try do that for real estate, I dare you. You'll be bored, right? The content is just, it's very same. Everything is great. Everything is cozy. Everything is, you know, we want to see the type of content that you find, you know, that appeals to different kinds of markets, the types of stories and perspectives that create, like, rich context, not just always the glossy front page kind of story. I talk too much.
No, you're a podcast guest. The whole point is you're to talk too much. So I appreciate
welcome
that.
The
so then, series. I mean, as an outsider, as an outsider who is somebody who is not from the country that is moving here. And it's really interesting because you just talked about the guarantees, right? Where in BC, British Columbia, the province in which we're at, the west coast of Canada, we have something called the 2-5-10 guarantee, which is, and this came, this is, you buy a new home, certain parts of your home will have a 2-year warranty, certain parts will be, have a 10-year warranty, and the, some of the greater structures will have a 10-year warranty. And this all stemmed from, child of the 90s, in BC, grew up in BC, we had something called the leaky condo scandal. And so there were a number of developers who hid under numbered companies and built shoddy condo buildings in along kind of the New West Key area, one of the older cities in BC, by the way, our old former capital of the province. And they, you know, kind of left the owners holding the bag when the pipes leaked or whatever. They were leaky condos. And so I actually had a friend who ended up buying one of the last leaky condos and got on the hook tens and tens of thousands of dollars, I think almost $100,000 of damage, when you're just scraping enough to get that initial mortgage. And that's why that 2-5-10 is there. Now, for yourself, as somebody that's not from here and trying to purchase and experience how to purchase real estate in a new country, It's a daunting experience, and it sounds like what you're trying to do with at REW is to make that experience for the first time home buyer a little bit easier. It's not like the toilet is unplugged and I can't fix it and I go on YouTube and try to fix the toilet or you know do floorboards for my house. Like, this is something where it's a large investment for most people in the world. This is their largest investment they'll make in their life, and you're saying there's really no content out there that's going to guide you along.
Well, I mean, there's listings, right? And everyone's got, you know, a distance from the nearest school, maybe past sales data. You know, that's kind of what you see in the market. And everything else is pretty much, you know, there isn't someone who's got like this vision to inform a generation to go with them on this journey. And so as RAW, like, and when we think about, cool, how are we going to grow our brand? How are we going to deploy our marketing dollars? How are we going to reach our objectives of getting dominance in the other provinces across Canada? This is, you know, not to like spill our secrets or anything, but this is the edge of our wedge, man. It's not about a crazy new model. It's not about the future necessarily. It's about today and maybe tomorrow. Because I think, you know, especially with new homes, and if you look at the Canadian situation, particularly in the West Coast where BC is, you know, you've got like, there's literally not enough place for people to live right now. So there are like thousands of projects coming out of the ground. Again, you know this. But to be honest with you, think about how little context there is for these places. they were fields and now they are going to be communities. How do we jumpstart enough culture to make sure that these communities thrive? Like, that, you know, if you're a family person, you get to move to that kind of community. If you're an art person, you get to move to a certain other kind of community. I think from what I've seen around, there's this opportunity for us to really explore real estate through a new lens, and through the lens of the people doing it, not through the lens of the businesses involved. You know, no one cares about a mortgage company's home seeker story. You know, no one should even care about like our version of it. That's why what we're trying to do is really give voice to stories that already exist. And as a silly example, like us at REW, we have stories, you know? So we're literally starting, if you look at some of the stuff we've created this year, the one is A Promise for Batman, which was a story of our head of sales, her search for a new home. And it sounds just like thousands of other Canadians, but how nice to know that it worked out for this one. It took 2 years longer, it cost more money, there was tax issues, but at the end of the day, there was Batman's a little dog, by the way. Batman.
Yeah, okay, I was wondering, I was like, well, how does this involve Batman and the Riddler?
So Batman and Falco are her small little, I think, chihuahuas, and I don't want to get it wrong on the other one. But she just wanted a piece of lawn for them, and so that was her search, that was her story. And there are ways that REW can be a much better website, a much better home search experience for Alana once we seek to try and understand her and people like her. And so when you mentioned the best experience for new home buyers, first-time home buyers, our logic is really that by being the best experience for first-time home buyers, we will be the best experience for all home buyers, you know?
So yeah, like I get that.
If we create that content and everything, it is just going to make it amazing for everyone else. So it's just a way of...
I mean, it's not. It's actually a pretty good play, right? Like they say that the very first toothpaste brand that you were introduced to, you carry that for the rest of your life. The first financial institution that your parents, you know, trudge you to open your first checking account, savings account, that's kind of where you're at for at least a couple of decades. And so if you're able to engage, at least from that's what it sounds like, the first-time homebuyer, you know, hopefully that these people actually do well, are successful, and they can upgrade and upscale to from a, you know, maybe one bedroom to two bedroom to a townhome to a house. Mm. And so if you're able to walk along that path with them, you're going to be their quote-unquote trusted partner, publication, platform, not platform, because you said no platform, but experience anyway.
We choose the word guide.
Hey?
We choose What's the that? Word guide. We see guide, ourselves exactly. as like a guide. Like, it's your journey. It's your mission. We're not telling you what to do, but like, here's everything we know that can help you, kind of thing. So it's almost like the anthropomorphization, there's a word, $10 word, of the brand is something that I'm personally quite excited about. We really are trying to be more of a personality in the space rather than a platform.
I love that. I think that is a really good way of looking at it, and I commend you guys for bringing in you know guys like yourself, you know, new blood, new thinking, yeah. And especially coming from the outside, because my next question actually was going to be to ask you around just the Canadian home affordability, housing affordability crisis that we talk about. You're in another continent in a just as populated part of the world. Is there a housing issue there? Is it any different than here, given that it's you're from Cape Town, it's an urban city? How is it different?
It is urban, and there are a couple of the physical characteristics that Cape Town shares with Vancouver specifically, and that's being hemmed on the one side by the ocean and then mountains on the other side, and in your case, the United States. and so for Cape Town, it's very much the same as the ocean on three sides, a mountain range, and then desert. And so that scarcity has always made it a very expensive place. But I think, you know, the lifestyle total package of Vancouver is a lot of the weather, the access to the outdoors. You know, it's obviously, like Cape Town, made it a very desirable place to live. And I think post-pandemic, that's even had some interesting, although they probably move out of the core, but still onto that West Coast. So we see similar dynamics here amongst the what we'll call the formal market in South Africa, which resembles what we see in Canada. It's obviously the informal sector, which is a whole other thing, you know, with like shanty towns and stuff, that I would say obviously doesn't have any comparison to Canada. But where I'd say that the 400,000 new souls that arrive onshore every year for the next however many years, you know, that's something that's quite different. We've got this situation where, you know, there's, even if no one else arrived, there'd still be a housing, there would still be housing pressure. But now that we've got, and personally, I mean, look, I'm going to be a beneficiary of one of those people arriving in Canada. But, you know, I think, how is that going to look? How are people from all of these outsiders going to make their way through the real estate landscape in Canada? I think there's a real opportunity there. And if I can say that, like, where I think things will get interesting, and we're not there yet, is that finding the solutions of how we should build or how the market should be arbitrated or something like that, not saying we're going to be in the driving seat of that, but I sure hope that we can be a strong and directly connected spokesperson or a representative of the home seeker in market. So, for example, helping to identify places that really need more housing, or, you know, helping to develop and market and create community somewhere else. So whatever way we can play and to sort of help in that respect is, I think, a unique challenge to Vancouver and Canada. But I kind of get the one, I jokingly say, the one thing Cape Town and Vancouver have in common is that the number one spectator sport is real estate. Everyone can have a conversation with you about the weather and the price of real estate. And I appreciate that, you know. What's wonderful about it as a marketer, as a brander, is that, you know, unless you're talking about something like music or the internet or water, you know, like very few things affect every single man, woman, and child on earth for the majority of their lives. And so what a cool, very large space to be able to get into. And I particularly find the BC... The opinions are quite varied and rigorous in BC, that's for sure.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's very funny.
Well, actually, let's talk about that. I want to hear what you see around that, because, you know, I sometimes, being in the forest, you don't see the forest for the trees. Whereas you have an outside perspective. What does that tell you? Is it as polarizing as we see it, or is it as, you know, was it the wage gap and the, you know, the middle class shrinking? Like, that's the commentary that I hear from, you know, my conversations, you know, the spectating that you're talking about with my friends. And what do you see?
I think, you know, there's definitely a substantial amount of, I don't want to really call it negativity, but when I was talking to certain people, particularly some of the photographers that I've worked with, you know, people that are in the creative freelance, I guess people like me a few years ago, you know, it is legitimately a dream just to own a home. Any home. They'll take any home. And that is something that to me is like the sincerity and almost there was like this little tiny hint of defeated heart underneath it, because they just felt like it was just an unrealistic goal based on the way things are going. Obviously, the world's been through the ringer recently in the last few years. But I found that there was a large part of what I would even call my peers who definitely had this dream, but it was being deferred so often that I got a sort of a sense of the sadness there. Then you've got the wheelers and dealers who are, you know, squirreling money away, putting, you know, playing the game with the bank loans and, you know, leveraging all that other kind of stuff, which is way beyond my ken personally. But there's people who, you know, who are out there making hay as best that they can. And then I've met a few of the richer citizens of Vancouver who are, let's just say, a little detached from the reality of things. You know, it's quite difficult to feel sorry for someone complaining about, you know, the wall around their $11 million home, you know, or the neighborhood or something like that. So I think it is an extraordinary a mixing pot of opinions, but I definitely did. I was hearing the people who had these dreams, or as we call the dreamers, and I think that I have respect for the hustlers, but it is way more of a... I want to call it a full-time job. Buying real estate is like a full-on job in Canada, you know?
Well, I think it can be. Now, we don't have the formal and informal market that you just talked about. So one thing that we don't have is the shanty towns and some of the other, I don't even want to call, you know, housing class units or whatever you would call it, because I don't think any Vancouverite would purchase or go and look for, oh, if I could only have a shanty house, at least I could afford that. So is the conversation, how is the conversation different in Cape Town then? And given that you said there's the dreamers, there's the hustlers, there's the extremely wealthy, is that not the case in your part of the world?
So what's really interesting is that, especially in Vancouver, this whole missing middle thing is quite weird. It creates very disparate housing options. You've got your suburban sort of detached homes, and then you've got all the big towers. And so what I've noticed is that you're actually not spoiled for choice in terms of what you can live in Vancouver. And I think that, you know, just as there is, I would say, what we call the affordability crisis, or affordable housing in good locations, is definitely something we have and are contending with here in Cape Town. For example, the way we do it is that I think something like 20% of all new buildings built have to have 20% allocated, all new buildings have to have 20% allocated to low-income houses. So we're seeing micro apartments, like 22 square meters. I don't know if these are good or bad things. I would say in South Africa, we don't have the term of condo and apartment. I had to learn the difference. Everything is for sale here. And if it's not for sale, you're renting. And the cost of renting is half the cost of sale. So do you know what I mean? Like there's this sort of weird secondary market that goes on here, whereas like over there, combination of the minimum, like if I'm not mistaken, if you're buying over $1 million, you need to pony up a 20% deposit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on the one hand, that's outrageous. Who has $200,000 that they don't need? But on the other hand, at least going into the transaction, every Canadian in that price range has 20% equity in their home. You can do something with that. In South Africa, don't even put anything down. You know, it's just like, that's cool. We'll just write you a...
You buy it with nothing down. No equity.
Let's just say that there are plenty of predatory lenders that take advantage of the lower, less sophisticated parts of the market. I hate using the word lower, but, you know, in terms of the economic scale, like that entry level. So I would say that things will get interesting when the interest rates start popping up.
Isn't that really just the subprime 2008 thing all over again?
Yeah, except less sophisticated.
Oh gosh. Okay. Well,
look, it's not really my area of expertise to talk on. And as I say, I've been far more interested in Canadian real estate than South African for the last 2 years. But I would say that, like, I would love to see more variation just from a number of reasons: architectural, aesthetic, quality of life. I'd love to see more variation in the living options in Vancouver. I think there's a lot of buildings that are very much the same. And I'd love to see some of that stuff. I'd love to see some individuality start to emerge out of in the future, you know, whether it's reclaiming.
So you want more hobbit houses? Is that what you're saying? We need a few more hobbit houses?
Anything but gentrification buildings. You know, I think I'd love to see just I mean, I browse through the pages of REW, and I must say it's quite difficult to determine why one house is a different price or one apartment is a different, condo is a different price from another. And I think there's some exciting ground for people to differentiate, like whether if you're selling your house, like there's general merit, I believe, in making it stand out by being a bit different. I've noticed that in Canada, there's a tendency to kind of pull together, coalesce, not wanting to necessarily stand out too much. And I think that there's a really exciting, there might just be the creative South African in me, but I want to see a red wall or a piece of art that's different. You know, everyone seems to have the same furniture and the same walls. And I just think that it makes real estate more of a commodity rather than like home. And that's kind of what I love to see. That's just my personal thing. I'm quite well off-piste from your initial question. I apologize.
No, I think this is a great conversation. Rare that I get to talk to non-Canadians about Canadian real estate, let alone
right.
South Africans. So this is interesting, and thank you for that and indulging me. Now let's get back a little bit more to the marketing side of things, because that's why we're here. You know, you went through a bit of the ringer, and over the last little while, you mentioned that COVID has been tough for lots of folks, and it must have affected your colleagues in marketing and the creative space. And I'd love to hear what you've seen in terms of the resiliency of marketers and what they've done to thrive over this time.
Don't you think how cool it is that people have become kind of like live streamers overnight? I think it's... I think obviously it's no surprise that the creative arts, I think, you know, largely freelance. There's a lot of freelance in this community, and all of those people would have been immediately let go or put on ice when stuff like lockdowns came down. But you know what, from what I can see is that those sort of the actual creative types have used this opportunity to do weird and wonderful new things. As I say, live streaming is one of them. I mean, even me, I've got cameras and microphones and audio equipment. You know, I think what's really exciting is that as we, say, coming out of it, but 2 years deep, let's just call it, we now have people who are, we now have distributed production studios all over the world, which is really exciting. And now with a global... or potentially largely global access to market, which I think is really super cool. For us, I mean, just as an example, obviously I'm here in South Africa. This is a weird quirk of COVID. I wasn't able to travel. I've only been able to visit for a month, but I wasn't able to organize the move during this period. And so what I've done is begun to build a little Canadian company here, or a studio here in Cape Town. We adhere to the Canadian stat holidays. You know, we try and learn as much about the culture. Like, we're trying to create this little space down here, whereas we can kind of understand, because the one thing we have is very little in the way of local context. Our sense of humor is different, as you'll probably get a sense of. and so what we're trying to do is, you know, create this little, we've been able to create this little... everyone was a freelancer, but we brought them together in this kind of collective, and we're learning how to work with the with our mothership in Vancouver. And so even as, like, for us, it was that, okay, unfortunately, like, because of the world the way it is, REW has REW North in Vancouver and REW South in Cape Town for those sort of reasons. Both companies are, like, very different purposes, but, like, here, as a creative unit, like, we have this opportunity to serve the Canadian market, and provide access to a lot of, like, film talent and all that kind of animation, audio, all that sort of stuff. So we can shoot in Vancouver, upload it, have it edited in Cape Town, and then release the next day in Canada. And so, how cool that this isn't even that difficult to operate now. And I think that's just an example of how people just trying stuff out have actually ended up creating quite productive, weird, new kinds of organizations. Like, for us, we're not remote. We're not in person, obviously, anymore. And I don't even think that we're hybrid, in a sense, is that we've gone for this belief that, like, it's basically remote, in the sense that you can be wherever it is that you want to be, wherever that makes sense for you. But we have made it a priority and a necessity that we do get together face to face in a purposeful way. And it's never to do our daily work together. It's to learn something or celebrate something or whatever. So we believe in this face-to-face fellowship, but, you know, we're building this kind of distributed team kind of just as we go along. And I think that's really cool for the people in marketing to think about, is that, like, how can you be a part of something that's doing what you want to do? And, like, that's very something that's very popular in the Web3 space. You hear it all off, so often on Twitter now. But I think that kind of freedom that gets espoused in that space is what we're looking to. I mean, we just want creative storytellers, designers, photographers. We're looking to collaborate in a way that we can, you know, provide a bit of stability as a base. But I think no one's coming back to being full-time anything, you know? I think everybody is going to be mixing it up in the market.
I think it's very interesting that, you know, you and I have never met. And yet your experience and my experience of my agency, Ballistic Arts, is very similar. So pre-pandemic, everyone worked out of my office in the suburbs of Vancouver. Everyone had to commute. Me being the boss, I made sure I had the office 4 minutes from my house. But still, there was still a 4 minute commute. And now everybody works from home. And within about, I want to say 12 months in, you know, we're almost through the first year, people started to disperse. So I had initially one of my staff move up north in BC to purchase a home, because you can't purchase a home down here. And then I had folks travel, right? And right now I have people working and traveling and vacationing all at the same time. My content producer is in Tanzania, and then he's going to be in Dubai next week, and then he's going to be in the UK. And he's working through this time while he's going to be on the beach celebrating his dad's milestone birthday. My COO is in the Philippines because his girlfriend hasn't seen family, and she's from Manila for 2-3 years. I have someone in Ecuador. I have someone in Spain. Just for the fact that, hey, we proved that we can do it, and everyone's able to be creative. In fact, some of my staff, maybe it's creative folks, creatures of comfort. What my UX designer actually said, I love working from home because I get my mug. My mug, no one touches my mug. I get to wear my fuzzy slippers and my PJs, and I'm more creative for it. And it's true. The work that we're getting is fantastic.
Yeah.
And so I think it's rare that we would have had the opportunity prior to the pandemic for me and you to be doing a podcast from the other side of the planet. And yet here we are sharing great ideas.
Yeah.
And I think this is true. I don't think it's going away. And I think the people, the companies that are forcing their staff to come back to the office 100% of the time, they are putting a ceiling, a limit on the talent that is accessible to them globally.
Yeah.
And that's a shame for them, but I think it's a boon for us. So
exactly. It's always an opportunity to recruit, as I say.
Absolutely. Now, we're mindful of time here, and we want to always do a rapid fire round.
Yep.
And just to get to know Justin a little bit. So I'm going to, you know, just fire off some questions and see what you got there, all right?
Okay. Bear in mind, it's 9 p.m., hey? You're getting me not.
I know. It's all good. So my first question is, because you tapped upon the fact that you have basically a little mini Canadian house there, and you're celebrating all the stats and all that kind of stuff. What is the weirdest Canadian holiday that you've had to observe, and you're like, what is this and why am I doing it?
Gosh, just about, well, look, every holiday at this point is a what is this and why am I doing it point of view. Just learning what a stat holiday is was actually something that took some learning, because it's provincial and all that sort of thing. I would say I don't have a good answer for that. I mean, what I thought was interesting is that Thanksgiving is different to the American one, and learning a little bit about, you know, the art, like the story behind that. And it's something I'm still, I'm looking forward to celebrating it hopefully later this year in town. But I would say that's probably the one that was a bit of a surprise and a discovery, but it's all new to me.
Favorite movie you saw in the last 6 months?
You're gonna learn during this process that I don't watch a lot of movies and I don't read a lot of books. And I know you've got some questions on both. I would say, gosh, can't think of a movie I've watched recently.
What do you do for fun?
I watch more series than I do movies.
All right, like series. Let's give it. What kind of series?
Ted Lasso was a real treat.
Ted Lasso was awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
I'm ready for season three. Right? Yeah.
Ted Lasso is the only Ted on television that was actually kind of cool. Like every other, because my name is Ted, and right, so me and my wife always joke whenever there's some kind of dork or side, you know, extra or some loser, they're always named Ted. You never get the protagonist being Ted. So the fact that Ted Lasso is our hero now,
yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, I will say, just as an interesting exercise, try Justin on for size. Justin is never the good dude in the story.
It's true. Justin's always kind of the evil one, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he's trying to go for your girlfriend or, you know, scam your 401k. I don't know. But there's never a good Justin in anything, you know?
Interesting.
You and me, we should sort of...
We should make a Justin and Ted superhero band or something like that. Right? That'll work.
Yeah, we're nice guys. Yeah.
What music are you streaming right now?
Everything, but I tell you, something, if you're not listening to it, to give it a crack, is Caravan Palace. It's electronic swing jazz.
That is a combo.
Man,
it's electronic so good. Swing jazz.
Yeah, so my vibe is very much like this vintage, you know, old Vitrola kind of 1920s roaring kind of sound, but like with like some fat beats.
Caravan Palace,
yeah.
All right, I'm gonna check that out.
Yeah, music video.
Is there a South African holiday that you love?
I like our Heritage Day is a nice day here in South Africa. It's just generally like South Africa is, I think, you know, it's obviously complex history, but it's this one day a year where everyone just goes and cooks outside, because that's the one thing that rich or poor, purple or yellow, whatever the situation is, north or south, everyone just goes out. Like, we definitely have this one small part of our culture that is just like, I think, cooked pardon the pun, into us. And so you literally can just smell like what you would call barbecue, we call braai. The one day is just like beautiful cooking meat all over the
city. What is your favorite braai dish?
Oh man. You gotta have it all. You gotta have a good steak, what we call boerewors, which is a sausage, that's sort of curled up. You gotta have a good salad, maybe a potato salad, and then you gotta have garlic bread, or what we call braaibroekies, which is essentially a cheese and tomato sandwich with onions cooked on the open flame.
None of this sounds healthy, my friend.
Man, didn't say it was.
It sounds delicious, though.
It's good for the soul.
Good for the soul. All right, give me a marketing tip to end this that's good for the soul.
What is good for the soul? I don't know. Don't feel free to say less. I think that is my thing, is that like don't overcook. Don't overcook the message. People are smarter and more aware of your what you're trying to say than you maybe imagine. So yeah, don't preach,
That is so true. I just finished a call right before our podcast started with somebody who said, I want to do a 30-second video and I want to put our new brand message, mission, vision, company history of the last 30 years into 30 seconds. And I just, come on, man, like it's 2022. You should know better than to ask me this. But you're absolutely right.
Yeah. And also stop writing search engine optimization content, please.
Please. Amen. All right, Justin, my friend. Well, you're far from the evil villain that your name bestows, but I do appreciate the time in the late evening that it is over in Cape Town. I do hope to see you when you visit town and hit me up when you can. But it was a pleasure talking to you, my friend.
And you, Ted, yeah, I will take you up on that. I look forward to making permanent residence in your neck of the woods.
All right, my friend. Well, Thank you, everybody, for another great episode of Marketing News Canada. My name's Ted. I'm from Ballistic Arts, and I'm the host of Marketing News Canada. And this is Justin from REW. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded in the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editors Travis Jeffers and the Podfather.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.